Hi, my name is Helen Little. I am Training Consulting and Events Manager at Coram Bath. And in this podcast, we're talking to Joan Hunt, who's going to introduce her in a minute, and we're going to talk about sibling assessments. Joan, do you want to just give us an introduction?
Hi, Helen, and thank you. Yes, my name is Joan Hunt. I am a trainer consultant for Coram Bath. You may have read a lot about Joan Hunt in the past, and it's probably not me because she's done a lot of work on kinship care. So I'm just Joan, but I feel very strongly about sibling assessments, and so that's why I'm here today.
Thank you, Joan. Well, should we start at the very beginning then? What are sibling assessments and why are they important?
So I think we really need to think about the brother-sister relationship at the very beginning of all of this. It's potentially the longest relationship that we're going to have, and it has it can have a real protective factor for people. It's also a real core part of our identity. And the majority of the children who are in our care system are part of a sibling group. And so we need to understand this relationship. We need to understand it, and importantly, we need to support it. So the sibling assessment looks to understand the functioning of that sibling relationship. A lot of our children have experienced adversity. And adversity, as we all know, impacts on our development and childhood development. And more importantly, the sibling relationship is part of that development process. And so those adversities and the trauma can really impact on that sibling relationship. So the sibling assessment looks to look at how does this sibling group function? How do they function? What makes them tick? But more importantly, within that is what are the individual experiences of the children within that sibling group? They're not a homogenous group. Any one of us who is a brother or a sister knows that we're all individuals within that group, and how we feel and think about that are all very individual to us, so that's really important. And the sibling assessment provides us with a tool to be able to look at what those factors are and how these children actually tick with each other. And that is the bare bones of what we are looking at here. And I think that in the past they've been plagued with lots of anomalies and lots of variables, because there are so many variables that can impact upon a sibling relationship, that we can get lost in all of those, and it makes it kind of a quagmire to get through. And so the initial response from a lot of social workers is that they don't want to do them because they can appear really, really complex as to what's going on with them. So as a social worker, I'm looking at doing a sibling assessment to see how the children function, to see how the impact of their past has impacted upon them. And then once that is done, then we can start a care planning process, but only when we've actually done the sibling assessment.
What have social workers done in the past, Joan? Rather, because we're talking about a sibling assessment report that's key to this. So what have they done in the past?
So in the past, and like a lot of social work training that has happened, you are asked to do a report, okay? And you say, I've never done one of these before. And so somebody provides you with one that was done earlier, right? And so you are already in a very vulnerable situation here, because you're reading another report on another family who have got completely different variables than the family that you are working with. The reports in the past were often written from a very single voice, so the voice of the social worker who will have worked with the children as well, so their voice will be there. But it's very much that's being reported, and it's reported on the elements that worker sees as significant. because there's so many variables, we have a problem, because you can end up going down variables that really are not going to provide you with any clarity as to what's actually going on here. It also means is that there is no standard across the profession as to what is expected and what it should look like. So this means that courts and families and anybody accessing their files are going to be seeing things that can be very, very different across the board, simply because it's coming down to an author within the report. So what we have here with the SAR report, the sibling assessment report by Coram Bath, which for me is the best thing ever as a social worker. For me, it is, because it's the core to everything that we are doing for our young people. And it provides a framework that keeps me from going down rabbit holes. And I can go down a rabbit hole like the best of them. It keeps me from doing that. And the most important thing is that it's multidisciplinary. So I have a multi-voice to it. And that multi-voice is the family are very much included within this assessment. Foster carers, if we've got foster carers, we're including them in that voice. We're including the school or education. We're including our contact workers if we've got them involved. We're also including health in that. And anybody else who's important and relevant to these children's voice is coming into this. That's being used by observation forms that are passed out to people and filled in, so that we have a huge breadth of knowledge coming in to inform what's actually going here. That provides clarity and transparency for everybody involved. So it's never just one person's perspective, which I'm not saying that that's what social workers would do, but that was a danger that easily happened within these assessments. The other thing that it brings to it is a real fairness for the children. It's also a historical document. So these documents can be on file for those in care for 75 years. They will be on file for 100 years for people who are adopted. Wow. So generations from now, they're going to be able to come back and see clearly who was involved in these discussions, what everybody said, you know, why decisions were being made the way that they were being made, and importantly, what the children said, because the children's voice is also very much a mainstream throughout these assessments. What is it that they want from these assessments?
That must bring another, if the fact they're held on record for so long and that obviously can then be accessed by children in the future when they're looking back on the road, that must place a whole other layer of complexity and responsibility to those writing it, surely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think back on reports that maybe I wrote 30 years ago, and think, have they stayed the test of time? And I'm not sure, you know, because and when you are looking at a sibling assessment where there are so many complexities involved, having the voice of all these other professionals within it is what I would rather be presenting to those children, so that they absolutely understand what's going on here.
But I suppose also, if because this sibling bond is so special, isn't it, whether you fight with your brothers and sisters or whether you actually love each other, I guess in looking back in years to come at these records, you'd want to know. And also we mellow with age, so we, you know, but looking back at those reports, you know, in times to come, you'd want to know that that special sibling relationship was actually taken into consideration, wouldn't you, and that decisions were made and that you agree with that decision with that hindsight view as an adult, wouldn't you? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, whether or not these decisions are difficult. So when we're talking about decisions, once it comes to, we've got the sibling assessment, what is the care plan? And what's the permanency option? Because for all children, that's what we are wanting, is the permanency. That's the element within us that gives us a sense of belonging and helps us sort of achieve, you know, our, you know, helps us achieve what we can achieve throughout our lives. So the sibling assessment, when we're looking at it, I'm also wanting to see evidence of if this sibling relationship was fraught with difficulties and complexities, what did those workers and professionals do to support that? Okay, so how was that supported within it? And importantly, within our legislation, we have to consider the lifelong implications, not just till a young person's 18, but the lifelong implications of them being part of a family or not being a part of the family and what that actually means. I think in today's world, we really have had a refocus both within the legal framework, our government framework and our care framework, of refocusing back on, okay, this is a really important element of somebody's life. What are we doing about it? What's our responsibility about it? So it may be at the end of a sibling assessment, we're using that information to support a parent with their child. We haven't done any removal. Maybe we're using it to inform them about, this is how your siblings are functioning, and this kind of needs to, you know, we need to be putting into place to help support them. It may be that children are going to be removed from care. So how are we supporting and informing kinship carers, foster carers, people, you know, about these children specifically? So that we have as best a chance as possible of keeping them together. If we can't keep them together, how do we keep enhancing that relationship? And those are the things, and how do we support that? So we don't want to come up with the care plan first. We want to do the assessment first, see what's there, and then that informs what we're going to be doing
next. You mentioned fairness earlier on. Is that part of what you were talking about in terms of it being a fairer process or a fairer assessment?
Yeah. So because you're using different perspectives, all right? So it's not a single perspective that's coming back at you. We can look at any sort of historical document. And if I was going to say the history, I read a book about the history of the world, on the year 2020, and it was written by Donald Trump. His perspective is valid to a huge number of people, but it's not the only perspective that's there. And so therefore, in order for it to be fair, it has to have a wider perspective, a narrative coming into it. So I'm seeing it from all these different angles that's kind of coming in here. And therefore, it provides that fairness, that balance sheet that's kind of going. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
just that, you know, somebody coming along and, oh, I saw the children at school, and I saw the children here, and I saw the children there, and I spoke to the children. It's, what do you see the children doing, and what do you see the children doing? And really highlighting that as being what's going on here.
It sounds like, and I don't wish to be negative, but it sounds like it's obviously very detailed, but actually sounds, and you said, I think you use the word complex, but you use it in a positive way, being complex and wide ranging. But for a social worker, that must just be, oh my goodness, this is going to take me forever. This is like a lot of writing up. There's a lot of talking to people. It's a lot of time spent with a lot of people. And for a busy social worker, what would you say about that? I'll say to that.
I would say the genius about the SAR report is the supporting letters that go out, the observation forms that go out. So those are being handed to family members, and maybe you're having somebody support them and filling it out. So it might be a family worker would support them. Same with the fostering worker, the foster carer, the supervising social worker could support them in it. You've got school, you've got education. They're filling out the documents and then you're bringing it back. And I always sort of say to people, what's really useful is to have like a small core group looking at that information coming back. You know, somebody from your permanency team, your manager and yourself looking at it and sort of saying, okay, what is all of this sort of telling us and what's going on? What this does is it leaves the social worker to do a really important task, the most important task within this, which is the direct work with the children and young people.
Right. Yeah.
Because that has been, because in the past people have gone, wanted to see the children in all these different environments, and children don't respond normally when you're there anyway. You walk in and they're like, what are you doing here? And what's going on? It's absolutely of no use nor ornament quite often seeing it. But what this does is that this anchors me in the children's perspective, and I can spend time doing what I need to do in order to show that. So I can show the individual lived experience of each of these children. What is the combined element of this sibling group? What are the different dyads within this group? And it's me doing the direct work that's getting that voice of the child within as to what's going on. So that obviously is a huge part of what we're doing here, but quite often maybe gets minimized.
It sounds like that might be the sounds like that might be the fun bit.
It's always the fun bit. Sometimes it's very emotional work. And I think that you have to have a level of experience and also about being able to be regulated yourself, because it can be very emotional. Some of the work that we do, especially with our children, you know, so yeah, but it can be fun.
So have you seen the big difference that it makes? Have you seen the sort of the before and after with using the sibling assessment report and before and after? And
well, the
some really practical
from
examples?
Everybody, the feedback from courts and from agencies has been the continuity and that all of a sudden people can read it and we know what we're looking for. And we also know what was involved in collating this information. And so therefore I'm not having to weed through it myself. Everything's really well and clearly set out, that by the time you come to the analysis of this information, it flows really well. So you're not getting lost in all of it, because it's really easy to get lost in all this information. But this, it keeps it concise and crisp. And that's the way that I like an assessment. Assessments can, if you're not careful, can get really rambly, or they can be missing the whole point.
I guess that the whole focus on the child and on the children within that sibling group actually gives the whole report a focus, doesn't it? And you know what you're looking at, and you're pulling it all together, as you said, which must mean that it must be quite satisfying to put together if you know that you've put something together that actually is a well-rounded 360 view of what the children want, but also what is right for them. I guess it's that balance, is it?
It's always a balance sheet. We're not going to get the perfect scenario. The perfect scenario would be that the children are at home and everything's going great. For us to have to make decisions about care planning, about, you know, if you've got a large sibling group, trying to find a family who will take in six children is a tough ask. So we inevitably end up in a situation where, are we going to have to separate the siblings? So what I want to achieve is the least wrong answer. It's not going to be a perfect answer. It's going to be the least wrong answer, and it's going to have really clear reasons as to why this decision was made, so that anybody looking back on it, they might not agree with it, or they may agree with it, but at least they understand the reasoning. And like I said before, because you've used these different perspectives, and a big part of it has been on the voice of the child, we're anchored in that transparency. This is kind of what we were working with.
And does the work in this assessment, and this real focus on the child and on the siblings and on their relationship and the importance of that relationship, does that then impact on the keeping them in touch afterwards? Is that helpful in that, do you think?
Absolutely. It's a core element of it because you may not be able to be in a position where you can live together. That doesn't mean you don't have a relationship.
No.
You will always have a relationship, and it's our focus is to bring that back into the fore and make sure that that relationship is supported. And let's face it, anybody who's part of a sibling group, I'm sure that there were times when you'd get together and it wasn't great, and and you fought and stuff happened, but that doesn't mean that it's not worth investing in. Doesn't mean that it can't change. It's got real potential to change over real time. How we think about brothers and sisters in adulthood is very different than when we were children, and that's a natural developmental process that we go through. But they're still very core to who you are. The worst thing we can do to a child is not tell them of an existence of a brother or sister in their adulthood. It's absolutely terrible to find out that information.
Because apart from anything else, they have shared experience. However dreadful that was, they have shared experience, and actually, nobody else has that experience like their brothers and other than a brother or sister or sibling in some way, do they? They have that's what sort of they understand each other. Those ticks and whatever and or quirky things that are about you. That's because that's where that came from. My mum used to do that. My dad used to do that, or whatever it might be, isn't it? And that sort of gives you a sense of grounding and belonging, I guess, to something, even if it's not in that able to be in that family relationship.
It's that sibling identity, that familial identity that kind of comes with it. And you may go into a new family. You may go into a foster family, an adoptive family, a kinship family. And you will want a sense of belonging there, but that doesn't mean you don't have a sense of belonging with this other family. This family will be with you, whether that will be a part of you. As an adult, whether or not you choose to continue a relationship is a choice. When it's been foisted on you as a child, there's no choice involved. And that's the difficulty. We really want to promote contact. We want to promote contact between siblings, whether they're in an adoptive placement and a foster placement, whether they're in a kinship placement and a foster placement, it doesn't matter. We want that contact to happen. That's not always possible. And that is a place for us to kind of up our game in the practice of how we support families and children within this.
Lovely. Joan, would there be any final thoughts for anyone undertaking this obviously really important assessment that you would want them to take away?
Use the SAR. Come on the training and use it because it will change how you do it. And the most important thing for workers is that by following the SAR report and the framework, you're going to be doing less work, not more work. And for any worker, that should be the biggest selling point to add all. If you follow this, it will write all your other reports after this. So for me, that's a win-win.
That sounds like a win-win for anybody, doesn't it? It'll save you less. Not often people say, "Oh, this will save you work, be less work," and actually, but it sounds like more effective at the same time.
Yes, absolutely.
Better decisions, better potential futures, better start. Okay.
Yes.
Joan, thank you so much. Joan has mentioned the fact you've mentioned the fact that Coram Baffer and training we do on this is our plug. So the next one is on the 24th of April. If you want any more information about this, contact me at Coram Baff or contact us via the website. And we look forward to seeing you on one of our trainings soon. But equally, any questions, please come back to us. Joan, thank you ever so much. It's been really interesting chatting to you this afternoon. And thank you.
And thank you, Helen. Take care now.
Thank
Bye.
you. Bye.